Today's reading is my reflections on Bartok, Béla Bartok. Music historian Helen Kaufman wrote, "Of music as language, with its own rules of grammar and structure, its own vocabulary, its own literature expressed in distinct and personal styles. Bartok's distinct and personal style at times is chameleon-like, informed by thousands of folk songs he researched throughout Eastern Europe, as well as Arab melodies from a trip to Tunisia, also influenced by the changing, at times fragmented world around him. When I was 12 years old, I broke the little finger on my right hand. It was bandaged in a splint for several weeks, during which time I practiced with my left hand, Bach inventions, Shostakovich preludes, and Bartok microcosmos. It wasn't until I was older, however, that I realized the amazing color and depth of Bartok, and also how helpful it would have been to continue with more Bartok for my injured right hand. There's something very strengthening and healing about his precise fingering and notation. Many years later, whenever I attend performances by the women's vocal ensemble Kitka, I don't know if you've heard of Kitka, they're based here in the Bay Area, I hear voices which are familiar to me from Bartok. The microcosmos provide a systematic journey through musical and keyboard challenges, changes of meter, independence of voices slash hands, tempo slash character changes, combining tonalities, etc. Sadly, I've heard established teachers state that they don't like Bartok and don't include it in their curriculum. What a loss. Whenever a person tells me they like Bartok, I'm never sure which Bartok they mean, the charming rhythmic folk-inspired pieces or the more emotionally difficult dissonant or atonal works. Bartok can be difficult with his precise fingering, tempo, and expression marks. We sometimes encounter the resistance of the student in all of us to resist. Perhaps it's resistance to authority. I want to do it my way. I prefer this fingering. And our culture, which sometimes says, it's okay, do what feels right, challenge authority, follow your inner voice. Yes, those things are good, but for me, Bartok is about trust. I would say to the student in all of us, trust his vision, his voice, the beautiful architectural structure communicated via marks and symbols on a page. Trust his years of honoring indigenous music traditions from regions devastated by war. Trust his dissonance, strident anger in rhythms, his challenge to the tonal conventions of the day. To me, Bartok reveals musically how people coped with the challenges of life. That is one of the things folk slash indigenous music does so well. Being open and trusting to the voice of a composer can make us open and receptive to the art and beauty in life. And I'll be playing some pieces today from the book 5 of the Microcosmos. If anyone took piano lessons, you remember this sort of distinctive cover, iconic cover. So
thank you, Marlon. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
As some of you may know, I've had a lifelong interest in art, psychology, and religion. I've been most intrigued by the connections that they form with each other that kind of intertwine like the strands of a Celtic knot. So imagine my thrill while in seminary several years ago, taking a required course on art and religion. I really loved the classes, and the professor was riveting in her lectures. After the course was finished, I, in my enthusiasm, met with the professor just to debrief. To my dismay, or rather angst, she told me that all art lovers eventually convert to Catholicism or to Episcopalian Church, mostly since liberal Protestant religion was all about the word and was kind of intellectual or left brain in content. And as she said, it was definitely not about beauty or feelings or a sense of divine presence. I was floored. For a while, I started attending a local Episcopalian church, which definitely pleased my 90-year-old great aunt. But its high church stateliness eventually wore down my curiosity and my low church informal manner. I had known that long before the beginning of the New Age movement in the 70s, spirituality and art mutually supported each other. A great testament to their interconnection is an actual art exhibit that my daughter Erica, who's seated back in the last pew, and I, hidden and anonymous, right until now. Sorry, Erica. Well, Erica and I went to a wonderful art exhibit at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. And the exhibition was entitled Beyond Belief, 100 Years of the Spiritual in Modern Art. Viewing it was a spiritual and aesthetic feast. Even very abstract art, you know, the art of the early 1900s that was non-representational, could be traced back to the idea that God or the divine or however we call her was beyond description but present in artwork. Last May, our congregation put on a service about building your own theology, many of whom I'm pleased to see are here today, in which members of the course through the visual arts, music, drama, words, and even the culinary arts expressed their own personal and subjective theologies. This service was a highlight of Unitarian Universalist artistic spirituality and stirred up in me great contentment. I was almost content. I was still haunted by my professor's bald statement. Is there no art in UU congregations? You know, our minimalist walls without much decoration do inspire quietude and reflection, and then the lovely natural scene we have outside the window is truly splendid. But does our church space foster a spiritual or an aesthetic sense of the divine? So this inner question spurred in me a quest. Are there or were there any UU artists? I knew, of course, they'd be difficult to find. Ever since the Romantic era, most artists, even more than evolutionary biologists like my colleagues at Stanford, just did not do church. And church itself didn't do a lot for artists except maybe condemn their works. The UUs might be different given our broad and open values. So what did I do? Of course, I did a Google search, and many lists of famous UUs immediately appeared on my screen. Not a lot of visual artists, but one name riveted my attention. Bela Bartok, the composer who salvaged my childhood piano lessons, as Marla so eloquently described. Now, I was a bit of a bumbler on the piano as a kid. I lacked and still lack the fine motor skills to play anything sonorous from Bach or Mozart or Clementi. Unlike my virtuoso brother, younger brother Michael, or my mother. So my piano teacher, out of frustration, gave me a book of Bartok pieces for children, part of the microcosmos that Marla talked about. I was like ecstatic. His kind of strange modes and wispy and dissonant chords kind of transported me far away from my mid-Atlantic baby boomer childhood. So I read about Bartok's life story. He was born in Transylvania in the 1880s, raised Catholic, but like many of his avant-garde buddies, became sort of a Nietzschean atheist. His son Peter Bartok stated in his biography that his father wrote, "If I were to cross myself, I would say in the name of nature, art, and science." That was his trinity. Later, Bartok became a Unitarian and raised his kids in the church in Budapest. Now, one would hope that Unitarianism is not just a home for religious runaways, like me and many of you folks. But in Transylvania, it had a really auspicious beginning. In the 1500s, Transylvania was on the border between the Christian and Ottoman Muslim realms, and Unitarianism arose there in part because of the rich interplay between these two cultural centers. So I imagine that Bartok found a home given his fascination with musical diversity. Bartok, when he started out, began composing in a rather typical late Romantic style until he heard a young au pair, Liddy Dosa, sang Hungarian folk tunes to her children. His compositions were then radically transformed. Instead of incorporating gypsy bar music into his repertoire, like Brahms and other classical composers, he literally went into the field, went into the streets, into the countryside, transcribing and recording on Edison wax cylinders the songs of farmers and their families. He thus broke, in our proverbial UU way, the hierarchical barriers between classes and ethnic groups. He, even in his truly synthetic fashion, would include snippets of Hungarian, Romanian, or Arab melodies all together in one composition, kind of like that world cello that we heard about in the children's story. As part of my reconciliation with my piano lessons, a few years ago, I took a year and a half of music theory and composition at Foothill College across the bay. As a final project, I wrote an orchestration of one of Bartok's early Hungarian children's pieces. Now, if I were a righteous preacher, I'd break out and sing right now, but given my lack of virtuosity and performance, what we will do now is play a short computer piece that I orchestrated off of one of Bartok's children's songs. During World War I, when Hungary and Romania were at war, Bartok managed to elude the draft because he only weighed 120 pounds. Must have been walking around a great deal recording his music. And instead of fighting in the war, he traveled to both Hungarian and Romanian villages trying to preserve their musical legacies. Bartok, even though quite famous in Europe at the time, later actively protested the Nazi and other nationalistic movements, which compelled him to flee to the United States, where he died in poverty. His other son, Béla Bartok Jr., later returned to Hungary, where he became the lay leader of the Hungarian Unitarian Church. While researching this sermon, I called up the wife of a friend of mine, Anka, who's Romanian. Asked her about Bartok. She at first said there's nothing in common between Romanians and Hungarians, and that Bartok was Hungarian, and then she, boom, hung up on me. I guess after some thought, the next day she called back and apologized and told me that Bartok was truly a genius and that his Romanian dances were like the music she herself had heard as a child. But more, not just a rearrangement of melodies, but a deep and unique integration of themes. Themes so beautifully rendered by Marla's exquisite piano prelude. It is said that Bartok virtually single-handedly created the field of ethnomusicology, the study of indigenous music from the local perspective. Bartok was thus the forerunner of Paul Simon's Graceland album that incorporated South African township music with American folk songs. Indeed, much of world music today, whether it's African hip-hop or Latin American jazz, owes a debt to Bartok's cross-cultural work. So I found my UU artist, not the only one, but a paragon of UU values. Maybe instead of being ferried up the dizzying heights of a Gothic cathedral or Michelangelo's Vatican, we as a church prefer the blended melodies of a lullaby. A lullaby perhaps simple in theme, yet eclectic and far-reaching in form. A frequent criticism of UUs is that we're theological grazers, lacking depth and steadiness. Perhaps so. We often do forage free range, finding ourselves to be Wiccan or Jewish Buddhist or Hindu Christian, rather than consuming the fodder of a prepared theology. But here again, we can learn from Bartok and even more contemporary artists. Hybridity is not bad, it is merely novel. And music, by virtue of its temporal qualities, permits and even welcomes a fusion of styles, cutting across ethnic and theological boundaries. Let us relish our diversity and graze upon the genius of others. Or in the words of our prayer from Bhagavad Gita, let us see the forms in hundreds and thousands, diverse, divine, of many colors and shapes. Amen and blessed be.